for this morning from Matthew 6. It is a paraphrase. It's a passage many are familiar with. Let me read to you the paraphrase. Don't spend your life stressing over the stuff that doesn't matter. Don't worry about food or drink or your body or your clothes. Life is about a whole lot more than just this stuff. Look at the birds of the air. They don't stress over the stuff, and God's earth takes care of them. Don't worry about the stuff. Look at something else. Look for God's kingdom. Look for the right way to live. Do that, and this other stuff, this tends to take care of itself. Now, we won't get to looking at the text until later in the message, because today is an introductory message to a new lesson that's going to take several weeks. As a matter of fact, we will get to it at the very tail end of today. We'll look at a little bit more in the weeks to come. You will know we're almost finished when you hear me start talking about the text. The human journey, the spiritual journey, is a quest for life. And it's a quest for true life, an abundant life. It's a journey to satisfy the deep yearning of the soul to be free and to be truly free. Key in on that word, freedom, or to be free. Because the journey of life and the spiritual journey is a journey to being truly alive, and that means freedom. It is the journey to not do what most human beings tend to do, which is to settle for someone else's version of what your life should be like. It's the journey to not settle for your family of origin's vision of what your life should be. It's the journey to not settle for what your society tells you your life should be. It's the journey to certainly not settle for what the brilliant army of young people up there on Madison Avenue's, what their vision of your life is to be living your life oriented around consuming their clients' products. But the yearning to be free is the yearning for the good human life. And what we will see in this lesson is that that quest is attained by coming to see truth. And truth, as we've heard from Jesus on many occasions, is the truth that sets us free. Now, this is notwithstanding the noisy distractions that would often keep us from seeing that it's so. The life that we want to live is attained by experiencing a truth that we don't often see. Robin, would you reach behind you and turn off the heat? It's getting a little warm. Contrary to American idealism, freedom and truth in the spiritual life are not attained by working hard. Freedom and truth in the spiritual life are not gained by applying the Protestant work ethic to our souls. Interestingly, we discover freedom and truth in the spiritual life is experienced, is attained by seeing something that we had not seen, by embracing a truth that we had not yet been able to embrace. Freedom, life, true life, good life, these are born at the very center of our souls, where we have these framing narratives that I've been talking to you about, these stories that we tell ourselves about truth, these stories that we tell ourselves about God, these stories that we tell ourselves about who we are as human beings, how we relate to the universe around us. We've got these framing narratives down deep inside of us, and they tell us how to live. They inform our instincts. They inform how we respond and live. We live out of a story. Ultimately, the human experience is to be living from some interior story. And freedom comes when that story gets truer and truer and truer. Distracted by our jobs or not, that dynamic remains, that if you find a true narrative, you find your way into freedom in life. Distracted by the longing for love or not, that dynamic remains. You will only find freedom and truth by finding a true story within. Distracted by a never-ending to-do list or not, this dynamic will remain. And those who find their way into this dynamic of a rewired, reconditioned, truer life narrative will find the good life, the peace for their souls, the freedom for their interior being. This lesson is about what people see when this dynamic is in play. This question is about how people get there. We've covered a lot about how people get to this place of seeing the truth at the core narrative in the past. We talked about spiritual community. The reason we're doing these life story groups that I'm passing around is to help people move in the direction of having spiritual communities around themselves. We've talked about the listening, learning posture that comes when we read, do spiritual reading, when we pursue spiritual truths. We've talked about the process of being quiet and still. We spent this morning in centering prayer, coming to that place where we still ourselves and quiet ourselves. All of which are tools to help that process unfold, that rewiring at the depth of who we are of these life narratives. But this lesson is going to be more about the obstacles that keep us from walking in that direction, and it will be about what we will see when we get there. That part will be a few weeks from now. Now, as a companion to this lesson that's going to take several Sundays, you might be interested in doing some reading during this time, and if that's the case, I'd like to suggest to you a book. It's a little devotional book I've told several of you about, but even if you've read it before, I think it would be a good read for the next 45 or 60 days. It is a pocket book. It's got 2 to 3 pages for each chapter. You could read each chapter in 6 minutes. It's got 31 chapters, so you could read the whole book in 1 month. However, I wouldn't encourage you to read each chapter in 6 minutes, and I wouldn't encourage you to read the whole book in 31 days. I've gone through this book several times in my own life, that I tend to spend 3 or 4 days on each chapter, reading it again each morning. I tend to soak in the truths and to think about them and to talk with people about them. And it's done a lot to rewire my core narrative about God and about life and about my place in the universe. The title is The Way to Love. The author's name is Anthony DeMello. The Way to Love by Anthony DeMello. Now, before looking at what it's like to have one's life narrative rewired, let's look at a big, big adversary that we must face down if we want to take on this journey, and it is distractions. I thought you'd enjoy that. That wasn't the slide, though. That's the slide. There are 10,000 distractions just waiting to sideline you from the journey to truth. 10,000 distractions just waiting to sideline you from the journey into life, and they are insidious distractions, and they are sneaky, and they are really, really difficult to spot. It's not that they just come up to you and start distracting you. No, they come from inside of you, which is what makes them so incredibly difficult to see. They come with a voice that sounds just like your voice. And they begin deep inside of us. They come from places where we're wondering if we are a good person or if we are not a good person. Am I a good father? I don't think so. Am I a good mother? I don't think so. Am I living a good life? Am I living a life with gusto? I only get one shot at this thing. Am I living it well? And I have doubts inside that I am. Most of us are pretty convinced that the answer to these questions come in the negative. We're pretty sure that we are screwing up our kids. We're pretty sure that we are somehow living a life that has been just settled for. We're pretty convinced that we carry some fatal flaw deep inside of us that's keeping us from living well, that's keeping us from loving well, that's keeping us from being loved, and so forth. And whether those insecurities take the form of an explicit understanding, I am insecure, or whether that we are bolstering this deep insecurity, this deep fear, with a form of confidence and bravado born of high performance, we are all nevertheless driven by these fears at the deep part of who we are, and we wonder how it is that somehow our life has become less than and become impoverished and become tainted. The sex thing is going sideways. There must be something wrong with me. The money thing isn't working out. There must be something wrong with me. My insecurities are taunting me. Something's wrong. Something's bad wrong. And then there's all those bad choices that I made 10 years ago and 15 years ago and 20 years ago. And those things are making these limitations on my life. And then there's this repeated relational weakness and failure that comes up. No matter where I go, it follows me around. And then there's the recurring conflict that goes on, and I'm the only constant in all of these different settings. And in my quiet moments, I have these things laid at my feet, and I have to question and wonder what it is that's wrong with me. And that is pretty universal for human beings. We carry around a deep and abiding shame and a deep and abiding fear, and those things are so toxic that they would destroy us, because there isn't anything quite as powerful and destructive to the human soul as shame and fear. And they would destroy us if we didn't have clever, often lifelong tools that help us cope. Tools to that we've deeply embedded within ourselves and that we use with desperation to keep us from being swallowed up by our inner demons. We're able to see those fears sometimes. Other times we're not able to see them. But in either case, we really do know how to run from them. And we've all mastered the art of running from our inner demons. So we make a sex thing just to distract us from having to look at the fears. Or we drink something, or we smoke something, or we buy a nifty widget so that we can play with it and be distracted from it. We create a thorny problem that will take all of our powers of attention to solve so that we can not have to give our attention over to this core narrative. We get a promotion at work that has greater hours and greater responsibilities so that we can use up all of our attention and not have to look at these things inside. We find somebody to be infatuated with, someone to lay our dreams on, and we find a cause to serve. We find a soul that we can rescue, and we use all these clever strategies, and sometimes they don't feel like strategies at all. Most of the time, they feel like that's our own voice telling us a reasonable thing to do, that it's our own voice telling us a logical course to follow. Do this because it's just the way things are. Do this because it's the right thing to do. And so, of course, it is. And all of our energies get diverted. And we never have to look at the primal fear that's down at the core of us that drives our human experience. We don't look at the thing inside of us that is telling us that we are not wonderful. We don't look inside of us and see the fear there that says that you are not okay, and you don't look at the fear because if you do, it will consume you. So though we might not be fully aware of it, we have all mastered the art of running from it. And so we remain distracted. We foster and then habituate ourselves to these distractions. We make them precious. We get attached to our distractions. And these habitual attachments, they are the things that we clutch to. And we can't imagine being happy without them. We can't imagine a life lived absent them. If I couldn't have this, we think to ourselves, life wouldn't be worth living. If this is what I get out of life, this will be okay as long as I have that in my life. And the reason that these things are so effective at distracting us from looking inside at our core narratives is because they feel like they're coming from us. The voice in which they speak are our own voices. As I said, there's a whole lot of marketing strategists who are out there trying to prey upon your interior fears in order to sell you stuff you don't need. But this isn't that, because those are exterior voices. They're powerful because they're so skilled. But they're not nearly as powerful as the ones that come from within. Those are much more insidious because there is some version of self that is telling you that this is the way to live. There's some version of who you are that is derailing you. There is some belief about what makes life good or what makes you good. There is something inside of you that it is deep enough to be an unconscious strategy that will let you pursue this so that you don't have to look at the central, negative, condemning belief that you have somewhere down deep inside of you that says, this is the way life is, and it's unbearable. We think that our inner voices are just the voices of reason telling us that a perfect frame for that perfect picture would just cement the entryway and bring closure to the decorating project. We think that this job promotion would simply provide better security for the children and a better future for us. We think that surround sound would simply improve our movie watching experience, or that we should have a better bond with our spouse because that's what good people do. And we think that those are just reasonable voices telling us reasonable things, only to discover that in some cases they're just ways of distracting us from looking within. Now, sometimes they are just reasonable voices telling us reasonable things. But sometimes these distractions and sometimes these attachments are just clever ways to keep us from having to look at that which we cannot bear to look at. They're keeping us from having to go up against this core narrative that would be so damaging to our sense of self. So, we get the best looking yard in town, and it distracts us. And we get the career that's going great, and it distracts us. We get the marriage that really sucks, and it distracts us. We get the bank account that's creating all kinds of turmoil, and it distracts us. And our distractions either reinforce our life narrative that says it really is as bad, or they give us a momentary respite from it so that we can feel like, oh, maybe it's not true after all. But either way, we're driven by them. And we're driven by inner compulsions. Love me. Love me. When Robin was making the announcements and she said about our Facebook page, if you will just go like us, we will then be good. Love me, or like me, or submit to me so that I realize that I have more power because I really don't believe I have that much power. Or respect me because I really don't believe that I'm respect worthy. Or affirm me because I really don't believe I'm affirmation worthy. Challenge my negative story of me. Make me believe I am good, God is good, life is good, the universe is good. So, you can see how these coping strategies, filling up our days and filling up our calendars and filling up our bank accounts and filling up our resources, taking and grabbing for all of this that we have to offer, can be the very antithesis of freedom. Certainly the antithesis of happiness and the antithesis of peace, and certainly the antithesis of fulfillment. Without a true narrative at the core of who we are, a true story about God, a true story about ourselves, a true story about the universe, we will spend our whole lifetimes, all the moments that we get to walk on this earth, living out of a mere collection of coping strategies. A whole lifetime merely living out clever tools that will mask a negative and untrue life story. And you put enough of those together, in aggregate, our coping strategies become what we would call a personality. The me that I project out to the world around me. The me that I sell to myself as what I believe myself to be so that I can make it in this world. And when we do that, we spend our whole lives propping up something that was never true to begin with. We lower ourselves. We find ourselves making attachments to mere possessions. We lower ourselves. We define ourselves by the automobile that we drive, and we say, see what that says about me? We define ourselves by the square footage we have, and we say, see what a fine class of people I belong to? We define ourselves by career success. See how I am able to succeed where others are not able to succeed? We define ourselves by our relationships. See how lovable I am? See how this person cares for me so deeply. See how that person just values me so deeply. And our lives get reduced to a series of attachments, people that we can line up, and circumstances that we can manipulate, and possessions that we can have attachments to, all of which are lined up just right so that they will tell us that our inner demons are not as bad as we think they are. Well, in this lesson, we'll look at some of the practicalities of how that happens, because forewarned is forearmed. If we see how this happens, it'll be easier to spot it when it is happening around us. But for today, I just want us to know this, that a life spent clutching after these lesser attachments that is so common in human experience really does reduce us. It really lowers us. It devalues the essence of what it means to be human. You are made in the likeness of God, our scriptures tell us. And we live at this base, lowered existence, enslaved to a reduced humanity, and that is certainly not the abundant life Jesus talked to us about. It is not the glorious existence that is the divine promise. It is enslavement to a prison of emptiness. It is ensnarement in a barren wasteland of meaninglessness, and it is not freedom. And freedom is the deepest yearning of the deepest part of the human soul. Because if we are free, we are free to be what we truly are, made in the very likeness of God. So this lesser approach to life, this clutching approach to life, this clutch of death, as I'm titling this lesson, it fills up our days and it uses up our energies and it exhausts our passions. And what it does is it acts as I've used this metaphor before. If you have a cup of oil and you begin to pour water into it, eventually it will float out all of the oil. And if we spend our days and if we spend our moments and if we spend our energies and if we spend our time chasing after these lesser things, the moments go ticking by and they become days and they become years and they become decades and we die. And we die having spent the one little scratch of time that we got to spend on this earth in the pursuit of that which was nothing, of that which was false. So, in this lesson, we'll see that releasing this clutch of death is in our best interests. We'll also see that releasing this clutch of death will have very little to do with the exercise of our wills. The path to freedom in life, it's going to turn out, is counterintuitive. It doesn't work the same way that most other things work in life. You can't apply more work and more effort and have it happen. This is more of a not doing something approach than a doing something approach. Now, that doesn't mean that you'll be passive. You'll see in a moment. It has more to do with seeing what you haven't seen before than it has to do with attaining something that you hadn't yet attained. This is a picture of a stereogram. While I'm talking, I want you to look at it and keep looking at it, but don't look here. If you look on this plane, all you're going to see is red and white swirls. I'd like you to imagine that there was a window and you could focus your eyes on the trees that are out in the backyard, maybe about 40 or 50 yards away. Look at those, but look through this plane. And while I'm talking, see if you see it. If you do see it, what you're going to see is a rose. And that rose is going to be pointing toward you with the petals facing you. So keep looking while I'm talking. It's relatively simple, so you ought to be able to pay attention to me and also be looking. So, in this lesson, we're going to see that a stereogram, that's what these are called, is a pretty good metaphor for being set free from the clutch of death. When we learn to adjust our vision, we see something different about life and God. Here's what's going to happen. As soon as you see this, you're going to think, oh, that was so easy. All I had to do was just change the way I look. You're just going to look at something different. All your life, you've been trained, if you want to see something, you look at the thing. So, you've been trained to look at this plane. And so, you heard me say a moment ago, don't look at this plane. Trust me, you're looking at this plane. You're looking at this plane because you've been trained to do that for a lifetime. But you can't see it by looking at this plane. You're only going to be able to see it by looking at a plane that's somewhere way off in the distance. And then you're going to find that this thing will pop out for you, and lo and behold, you will be looking at it. Well, that is the perfect metaphor. So, when we adjust our vision to see something about God that we have not seen, see something about self that we have not seen, to see something about truth, we begin to discover, that's what this spiritual journey is about. And the seeing changes everything. Because when we see what we didn't see before, it breeds in us a different orientation to life, a different way of relating to people, a different way of relating to things, a different way of relating to kids and jobs and life. And we will stop finding our meaning and finding our security and finding our fulfillment in people and in possessions and in career advancement, in the recognition of our peers, in money and in power, in any of those things. We will still have those things in our lives, of course, but because we see differently, these things will no longer dominate our days. They will no longer determine our actions, and they will no longer control our thoughts, no longer produce emotions, and no longer produce instincts and feelings that drive us and compel us forward, and we will find ourselves beginning to be free. We will see the truth, and the truth will set us free. We will see the truth that we are not bad, that God is not angry, that we are made of the same stuff God is made of, in the very likeness and image of God. We will see that our natural state of being carries with it that all the divine attributes, and we will see that you are already happy. You don't have to work to be happy. That you are already peaceful. You don't have to work to be peaceful. You are already kind, and you are already compassionate, and you are already caring, and you are already wise, and you are already understanding, and you are these things because the divine is within you. You just have to change your focal point and see differently. Now, odds are you didn't see the rose yet. Anybody see it yet? Nobody? Oh, Tricia, there's a couple of them saw it. All right. But that's okay, because I want you to go home and just put in the word stereogram. Google it, because it's a little easier if you will hold the computer right up by your face and then move it away. It's also a little easier if you look at something on the other side of the room and then move the computer in front of your face. It's a little easier. This is a hard way to see it, but you can do it. And when you do it, it's almost like I don't have to give a lesson that day, because that will be the lesson. Because all I want to do is make an association. When you see that thing, that's what I'm talking about on the spiritual journey. For you to be able to see what you didn't see before, when it was there all the time, that is what I'm talking about. It isn't a matter of effort and trying. There is an ancient Christian tradition. It is a teaching, it is a perspective, it is a practice, and it is called detachment. And this is the teaching that was wrapped up when Jesus was saying, don't get too wrapped up in all the stuff that's going on. Detach yourself from it. Because as we separate ourselves from these lesser attachments, it is a regimen of training our souls to see our coping strategies. And in so doing, what happens is we put ourselves in an environment where it's easier to see. Doing these things that Jesus said is kind of like taking the computer, moving it out, letting our eyes adjust, and then slowly bringing it back. When you set yourself not so much worried about, you discipline yourself to not so much be concerned about what you're going to wear and what you're going to eat and where your job's going to take you and what your career is going to do. When you go through those practices, it's not because they have in themselves some kind of nobility. It's that by doing that discipline, you bring yourself to see what previously you might not have seen. We'll talk about these practices of detachment in this lesson, but before we do that, I hope you can hear how very different this kind of spiritual journey is than it is focusing yourself on doing something or not doing something. This is a very different approach to spirituality than modifying your behaviors, than being selfless, because good Christian people are supposed to be selfless. It's a very different proposition than keeping your sexuality in check, because that's what you're supposed to do. It's a very different proposition than being ethical, because that's what good people do. They are ethical. It's not about trying. It's not about striving. It's not about pushing. It is about seeing something that you have not seen before. And when you see it, it changes everything. Now, you can't make yourself see that rose, but when you do, you know that you always had the capacity to see the rose. It was always in there. I mean, it's not hard once you've done it. Once you've done it, you say, oh, all you have to do is make your eyes do this thing. Oh, my eyes could do that. I could do that thing. It's no harder to live the spiritual journey. It's that, oh, the divine is within me. Oh, this is the way that I find access to the divine. Oh, yeah, that's always been in me. It was always there. We simply learn how to change our perspective and see what it is that we hadn't seen. But sometimes it's really hard to see it. I could hold that stupid thing in front of my head for an hour and not see the stupid thing, but it's there. So in the text that we read this morning, it's very difficult for me to believe that Jesus is teaching you a discipline, something you should be doing. How in the world are you going to stop being concerned about food and about clothes and about something that you should drink and shelter? Jesus, I'm sure, didn't know about Maslow's hierarchy, but he certainly did know that you have to strive to survive. We need to eat. We need clothes to protect us from the elements. We need a place to live and so forth. But I don't think Jesus is teaching us a discipline. I think Jesus is teaching us more along these lines. When you see the truth, when your eyes have learned to focus on this alternate reality, you will find what the birds and the lilies already know. And that is that God's earth takes care of food and drink, and you don't have to spend your life focused on that reduced version of being human. There's a whole lot more going on in this game than that. There's more going on in the human experience than there is to those attachments that keep your inner demons at bay. There's a whole lot more going on in this experience, so don't settle for a reduced life dominated by these coping strategies that you use in your life. Elevate your vision. Look beyond the current circumstances. See, truly see. And when you do, you will find your way into truth, and that will lead you on your way into freedom, and that will lead you into the abundant life for which you are made. And you will let go of the clutching, and you will let go of the grasping, all of which are killing you anyway. Well, this is my desire for us as a community, to be free, to see what we have not yet seen. It's my prayer that this lesson will help us elevate our vision and to look beyond the immediacy of our coping strategies. So, Lord, I pray that the Spirit of God would open the eyes of our hearts that we might see a true and living story. A story that erupts within us a vibrancy of life. A story that connects us to lives that are lived peacefully and fully and with fulfillment and with compassion and with wisdom and with kindness and with goodness, because we tap into that which is true about God and about ourselves, and about this universe in which we live. Be that so, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, if you would, please.